I will be back, believe it or not. This is the most fun I've ever had in my life. Second best night of my life, besides marrying my wife, obviously. I know there's a lot of doubters, but listen, life's about, you know, falling down and getting up. Doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down, it's about getting back up. So if there's any kid out there that's told by a parent or a coach or a teacher or somebody that they look up to, somebody that's supposed to push them and believe in them, and they're told no, don't listen to them. Believe in yourself. Sometimes the outcome isn't always what you desire it to be. But the true failure in life is not trying at all. I know that sounds preachy and kind of weird for a guy who just got beat up, but this is the time of my life. Thank you, Cleveland. Thank you for having the balls to do this, sir.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 95 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. That, of course, CM Punk talking right after his defeat in his debut match in UFC. And nothing but respect for CM Punk. I know there's a lot of haters out there. There's a lot of people, fans, WWE fans, MMA fans, talking all kinds of stuff in the aftermath of that fight for CM Punk. And I got to tell you, I am not a big CM Punk fan. I was when he was with WWE, when he kind of transitioned and made the switch into the Straight Edge Society, and then when he became the Paul Heyman guy. I enjoyed that character, that version, if you will, of CM Punk the most. But I always respected his ability as a professional wrestler, as a performer. When he left, you know, I was bitter. I was not happy that he left. And I kind of had that feeling that a lot of fans had with was good riddance. You know, see you later. You are taking your ball and going home. Things aren't going your way. I can still kind of understand why he did it. He took a stand. He didn't like the way things were going, and he left. And, you know, a lot of times as fans, we feel betrayed when, you know, we put these guys up on a pedestal, and women for that matter, and then they do something that we don't enjoy, we don't like, and then they leave. And we feel like we've been betrayed, they've turned on us, whatever we're thinking. And, you know, for CM Punk, this was something that he wanted to do, he needed to do, and he says he'll be back. So I wish him nothing but the best. I think that this world today is full of way too much negativity, and we need to do more to boost each other up, build each other up. You know, we can have differences of opinion. You know, obviously we're going to not all agree. We can agree to disagree. We can be cordial and nice and kind about it. And I haven't read all the comments online. I've seen some, including one. It's a picture of Triple H, and he's smirking, and CM Punk is in the background, you know, after the defeat. I don't think that's a real picture. I hope that it's not a real picture, but I don't feel like it is a real picture. I feel like somebody got creative with Photoshop. If it is a real picture, you know, shame on Triple H and WWE, because be the bigger person and, you know, take the high road here. He left your company. We get it. It's over. It's done. He did not win this first match, but you know what? The victory, as he said, was getting in there and trying and doing it. How many of us are held back by our own limitations? We don't want to do something. We don't want to step outside our comfort zone because we're afraid of failing. Who are we afraid of disappointing? Ourselves, our parents, our spouses, our children, our friends, you know, whoever it is. You've got to eliminate that fear of failure and just try it. And I know I'm getting way off course here, but I just wanted to say a few words about the match, the fight Saturday night, and the loss. But at the end of the day, it's a victory, because I think even if UFC fans and WWE fans poop all over CM Punk in the days that come, and I think that they will, I am one who, and I know there are a lot of others out there who look at CM Punk in a different light, that he at least got in there and did something outside of his comfort zone. And, you know, he may have failed this first time around, but I think that he will be back. And even if he's not back, at least he tried it once and he can, you know, go on to the next thing. So nothing but respect for CM Punk and whatever else he decides to pursue. And I know a lot of fans were like, oh, he's coming back to WWE. I don't hold your breath on that one. I don't think that, you know, there are, you say never, but that's one situation I would be really surprised if we ever see Punk back inside a WWE ring to wrestle, at least. He may be back years from now if they do a Hall of Fame thing for him. But, you know, my thoughts are CM Punk at least tried something, and I appreciate that effort and hopefully inspires others to do some of the same kinds of things. Today's episode, though, is going to be part of my interview with Leaping Lanny Poffo, the genius Lanny Poffo, through a friend of mine, Rob Fairless, who has a show called the 25th Hour Radio Show. It's based out of Southern Illinois. It airs on Sundays here in Marion, Illinois, but they're all over Facebook and have a website, Twitter, all that good stuff. So check out Rob. I'll have his links in the Jittery Monkey and iTunes section of the synopsis for this show. You can check it out. He has celebrity guests all the time. I mean, this guy nabs some pretty big names. He had Leaping Lanny. I call him Leaping Lanny, although people probably better remember him as the genius. But Lanny was booked and ready to go, and Rob was not able to do the interview, so he asked me to fill in for him. And I did, and I appreciated the opportunity to do that. And when I didn't really get to say this on the radio broadcast. That's why I'm talking about it now, and I'm going to use, because Rob said I could use the interview after it aired on his show. I've listened to Lanny Poffo interviews before, and a lot of them are about Randy Savage, who of course is Lanny Poffo's brother. I didn't want this interview to be so much about Randy Savage. Yes, we are all intrigued and fascinated by the Macho Man. He was obviously one of the biggest names in the history of professional wrestling. But we've all heard those stories. I wanted to know more about Lanny Poffo and kind of dig into him a little bit more. And I really probably didn't dig in as much as I could have, should have, and wanted to. He's still, to me, he seemed kind of guarded and very self-deprecating at times. And I, you know, Lanny Poffo to me is one of those guys. Yeah, he was enhancement talent. He was a jobber, whatever you want to call him back in the 80s. But he was one of those enhancement talents that we all remember. You know, there are a handful of the quote-unquote jobbers from our childhood, and I say that for children of the 80s and, you know, the 70s and 80s. I always looked up, I don't want to say looked up to, but I always respected Lanny Poffo and looked at him as one of those guys that, you know, he's getting his butt kicked week in and week out, but he's in there and he's doing it. And back then it was still semi-real to me. So, you know, I have nothing but respect too for Lanny Poffo and anybody really who gets into to the wrestling game. But, you know, Lanny Poffo, he's very humble. He's very kind-hearted. And I felt like, you know, he for so many years lived in Randy's shadow and still does to this day because, like I said, a lot of these interviews are about Randy Savage. And Lanny Poffo wrestled here on a program in Southern Illinois, ICW Wrestling. And so we'll talk a little bit about that, but we talk a lot about his career in the WWF. When he was doing the poetry, how that all kind of came about. It's a kind of a fascinating story, how he became and then transitioned into the genius character, and then what he's been doing since then. And I appreciate his time, and I appreciate what he has done. A couple of other quick notes. You're listening to this probably on Monday. Of course, Backlash has happened. Chad and I talked over the weekend. Our schedules aren't really going to sync up to do like an analysis recap show. And we also talked a little bit about the fact that you probably don't want to hear our thoughts on what happened afterward when there are so many other podcasts out there. There are, you know, a lot of former WWE guys have shows now. It's becoming a very competitive market out there to listen to a couple of fans just talk and rag on things. So I'm kind of looking for more interviews to fill this time with. I have one set up for next week, which will be out of this world. Yes, that is a clue. So I look forward to doing more interviews. And if you have suggestions, ideas for interviews, if you yourself are an indie wrestler listening and want to be on the show, reach out to me. Let me know. I'm wanting to highlight indie wrestling too. Of course, Stride Pro Wrestling, my home wrestling base, if you will, here in Southern Illinois. October 1st, the next big show coming up in Marion. They have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, so check it out. Cape Championship Wrestling is also near and dear to my heart. They are over in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Their next show, September 24th. And then Warrior Code Wrestling in Christopher, Illinois, coming up with a show on September 17th. So if you're a local fan here in Southern Illinois, Southeast Missouri, Western Kentucky area, I encourage you to head out, check out those shows, support indie wrestling wherever you live, And really, it is the foundation, if you will, for professional wrestling. So check out my123cents.com. We'll have blogs up this week with backlash, fallout, if you will, and thoughts on that. And we'll also, talk about whatever else is going on in the world of professional wrestling. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the genius, Lanny Poffo.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Fans who are listening here in Southern Illinois are very familiar. I hear it all the time asking about International Championship Wrestling, a promotion that ran in the late 70s and early 80s by your father, Angelo Poffo. Can you tell our fans a little bit about the history of that company and what you guys kind of ran, I guess, Kentucky, Tennessee, Illinois area? Is that right?
That's right, and that was before flying. We were just driving along, sometimes not getting a lot of sleep. We did it for years, and I learned to sleep in very uncomfortable places. So it was like a tale of two cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. And it was not my idea to start a company. In fact, I was doing quite well. I was going to go to Los Angeles, and I got a phone call. Come on, it's the family, we need you. So I came, and I tried to make the best of it, and I sure made a... Do you remember Ted Hike?
I do remember that name, yes.
He's not around anymore, I bet. But he's the guy that... He was our connection for getting WSIL Channel 3 in Harrisburg.
Yes, yeah, we were located in Harrisburg at the time, and when people find out, people who were there, who are still here at the station now, and find out that I am a wrestling fan, they often talk about the times, in particular, when your brother Randy Savage would bring the tapes. Like, he literally drove the tapes to Harrisburg to drop off at the station, and they were kind of in awe of that, and looking back and remembering that. Are there any particular memories of that time period that, because were you already wrestling at that point, or you said, you know, that you were kind of called to help the family business, so to speak. Had you had something out in L.A.? Were you going to be wrestling out there?
Yeah, I've been wrestling since 1973, and we're talking about 1978 is when it started. So I was already well along into the career. And now I still get offers to wrestle, but I don't take them because I have to pull my trunks up to my boobs. And I don't think the fans deserve to see a guy that's almost 62 years old trying to wrestle. In fact, sometimes I'm such a whore that I've accepted bookings because it was a lot of money. And I had an urge to give a refund to all the fans that, you know, saw professional wrestling on the marquee and then paid to see it and got something less.
Well, you obviously, you know, you just mentioned you've been in the business for 40 years or just over 40 years. How did you go from your time in International Championship Wrestling? I know, I believe there was a stint in Memphis as well before you got the call to go to the WWF and wrestle under the moniker Leaping Lanny Poffo. Were you already Leaping Lanny, or was that something they gave you when you arrived in Connecticut?
I've been Leaping Lanny since 1973, and I stole the name from Leaping Larry Shane, which is, and he got killed in a car wreck, and he would have been one of the greatest of all time. But I liked that nickname, and I used it, and I stayed Leaping Lanny until I became the genius.
Now, I remember reading in the aftermags, and I can remember pictures. Was there a point where you wore a suit of armor as well?
Yes. It was a point there. But the armor got destroyed when I used it in too many bunkhouse battle royals. And after all that pounding it took, I just threw it away. It was not real armor. It was theatrical armor, the kind that if you wanted to see the Broadway musical Camelot, that's what maybe Sir Lancelot would be wearing.
One of my favorite memories growing up with your time in WWF, because where I grew up, I was St. Louis, and we didn't get international championship wrestling there. So my first, other than reading about you in the magazines, was seeing you in the ring for your time in the WWF. And the poetry, those were all original poems that you read before matches. Is that right?
That's right.
So did you have a passion for writing along with the wrestling, or how did the poetry work its way into that? Because I don't think we've seen anything quite like that since, or even before before your time with WWF.
Well, just like when I bought the suit of armor, I was always looking for a way to give myself a gimmick that's never been done. And because I was so interested in writing poetry and things, when I first became a guest on TNT, have you ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Tuesday Night Titans. I said, well, I'm going to be a guest on TNT. And then I said to myself, self, if I'm boring, they'll never ask me back. So that's when I got out my suit of armor, and I did a poem for Vince to go look back through the annals of history and the Wrestling Hall of Fame. Men from all nations with courage to spare, who struggled to carve out a name. Now compare these high standards of valor to those chivalrous knights of yore. With bravery staunch as their armor, their glory both legend and lore. My medieval connection with wrestling relived that magnificent past. Though mindless skeptics may snicker and scoff, the winner is he who laughs last. Alive with the love of wrestling, I appear on TNT between Vince and Awful Alfred, the hottest show on TV. I'm not your average wrestler, but I wouldn't want to be. I never scream or kiss my arms. I'm happy just being me. I call myself Leaping Lanny. I validate what I say to every single wrestling fan who's watching USA. Yes, I believe in miracles. As God has blessed this great land, I believe the referee will soon be raising my hand. And then when we went to commercial black, Ben said, Lanny, that was great. From now on, you do a poem before every match. And I tried to be blasé about it, but inside I was going, yes! And I was all excited. I said, wow, I get to do a poem before every match. And that was, yes, they were all mine, the good ones, the bad ones, the lousy ones, everything was mine.
I love it. And when I was in eighth grade, in English class, we had to do a poetry unit and cite poems and put together a packet. And I remember pulling one of yours from WWF Magazine and citing you as one of my favorite poets. So those memories are good. And it was a great marketing tool, too, because you would read them off of the Frisbees, I think, at one point, and you were throwing those out to the crowd as well.
Well, you're an expert in wrestling. Have you ever heard of the Fabulous Kangaroos, Al Costello and Roy Hepperman?
Yes, I remember reading about them, yes.
Okay, they used to throw cardboard boomerangs out. And the boomerangs would have pictures of Roy Hepperman and Al Costello and their manager, Wild Red Berry. And the reason I remember is when they threw them out to the audience, all the kids would scamper for them, and two of the kids were Macho Man and Knee. And, of course, you know, he was the alpha male, so if it came between us, he'd get it, you know? So anyway, I remember how exciting it was to receive something like that when you're a fan from the audience. So when they gave me the poetry gimmick, I ordered a couple of thousand poems on pieces of paper. I rolled them up as scrolls, threw them to the audience. But what happened was they're not aerodynamic enough. They don't travel.
Yes.
But, and I'm thinking, well, Al Costello, his traveled a lot because, you know, he threw the boomerangs. Of course, it wasn't real boomerangs. It was cardboard.
Uh-huh.
Now, they carried a real boomerang in the ring, which was from an aborigine in Australia. But those are expensive and they're dangerous.
Sure.
He would bring it to the ring as a prop. Okay, but then I was thinking, what can I throw to the audience that's going to travel? I can't use a squirrel because it doesn't travel. I can't use a boomerang because I'm not from Australia. And then it hit me, a frisbee. So I bought 500 frisbees and I had a poem printed on them, a generic WWE poem that I wrote. And then when I was almost out of frisbees, the marketing guy, I can't remember his name, he says, do you mind if we sell these at the arena? And I said, do I mind? I would love for you to do that. So from then on, I got 3 frisbees. And then I win, place, or show, after my match, I would go to the venues where they were selling the frisbees.
Mm-hmm.
And I would sign them. And, you know, be nice to people and everything. And they would, because of that, they would sell out every night, sometimes 500 frisbees or more.
Wow.
Every night. And we sold several hundred thousand frisbees. And then when I became the genius, of course, they stopped selling them. And, but that was very successful marketing. And I always remember Sam Walton. Sell for less and be nice to people. Well, you know, the frisbees cost $3. I couldn't change the price. But being nice to people, I never found that to be really difficult because I do not look down on the people that looked up to me.
That's a great attitude to have. How did you go then from, how did the transition work going from Leaping Lanny Poffo, you know, the guy everybody liked to cheer and root for, to becoming the genius, the smug, cocky bad guy, so to speak, and managing guys like Kurt Hennig, the Mr. Perfect, of course, and then later on the Beverly Brothers?
Well, thank you. You called me smug and cocky, but you didn't say effeminate. I appreciate that. So anyway, but I know you're just being polite now, because, you know, I certainly had no shame about. I believe in cheap heat, you know, just anything to get a reaction out of the audience, and I didn't care about a thing called dignity. So anyway, when Vince decided to go for it, they kept me off of TV for about, I don't know, 6-7 weeks, and then I came up to Stamford, Connecticut, and to the studio, and I did 6 vignettes. And then they played those vignettes, and in the meantime, I was growing my hair out, working on my walk, getting enough caps and gowns, you know,
mm-hmm.
getting all set. And the vignettes went something like, behold, the world's smartest man, so handsome and so proud. The epitome of genius, amazingly endowed. A one-man wrestling renaissance. Just let your heart rejoice and bathe in all the luxury of my poetic voice. The best of my competitors are so inferior, I far outthink their greatest thoughts with my posterior. And when the bell is sounded on a stunning victory, I'll view that messy spot where my opponent used to be. I remind the competition and every foreign fan, behold, the world famous genius, the world's smartest man, things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they played those. People got really sick of me. I came out there and preened around and was a bad guy.
Now, was it ever discussed? Was there a reason, a thought put into why there was never any acknowledgement of the relationship, the fact that you and Randy Savage were indeed brothers in your time in WWF, WWE?
Nobody ever told me anything. I was just lucky to be there. And, you know, let's face it, I came in there with nothing, you know, just barely above the guy that takes the jackets back. And then in 1989, I do a something with Hulk Hogan, and I'm 4 months in main events.
Yeah.
So I've had 23 appearances in Madison Square Garden, twice on the main event. So, you know, to be headlining Madison Square Garden at all is a tremendous thrill. And the only time that they ever said that me and Randy were brothers was a year and a half ago at the Hall of Fame, when I inducted my brother in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
I did. I have made it out to 9 of the last 11 WrestleManias. I unfortunately took last year off in 2015 and didn't make it, but I did watch it on the network. Was that I know that there had been a lot of discussion leading up to your brother going into the Hall of Fame, and it was a family decision. I know that you and your mother had discussed it in at great detail. Have you been in talks with WWE since then? Do you ever see a day where you and your father, Angelo Poffo, will be inducted into the Hall of Fame as well?
No, it's never going to happen. I'm just glad Randy got in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a matter of fact, I was in Dallas and I wasn't even invited to the Hall of Fame. And I was in town because I was at the WrestleCon.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And this was last year, and that's a year for, you know, I made the speech, you know, I'm trying to make everybody happy. And then the next year comes and, you know, I'm not even in the VIP section.
Now, do they merchandise any of your likeness or characters? Or do you have a Legends contract with them? Or is there any kind of relationship at all with WWE right now?
Four times a year I get a check from whatever marketing money they figure I deserve.
Hmm.
And no, I don't have a Legends contract.
Is that something, I mean, they always say never say never. And, you know, we saw so many mended relationships through the years. Are you open to any kind of relationship with WWE at some point if they were to induct you and or your father?
I wouldn't refuse anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, you know, the supply and demand, and right now the phone isn't ringing except for you. You just call me.
So how are you? You had mentioned WrestleCon, obviously. You still make it around the country to these other events and checking out and meeting with wrestling fans, I would imagine.
I don't go to, let's put it this way. For every 5 times I get invited, I accept one of the bookings, you know, because my mother is going to be 90 years old. I look after her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't like to do too much traveling right now.
I understand that. Do you keep in touch with anyone from those days, whether it was with International Championship Wrestling, WWF? I know you briefly were with World Championship Wrestling as well. Do you keep in touch with anyone still in the business?
George Weinroth. Remember him?
I'm trying to recall that.
He was my tag team partner in the ICW.
Okay. Now, was that all? Did you do all of that in the Lexington, Kentucky area, or did you guys travel around a lot with ICW?
We lived in Lexington and traveled around a lot. There was no place we didn't go. West Virginia, Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama. I mean, there was no trip too close, no trip mm-hmm. too far.
Yeah, that's a lot of time on the road, I would imagine, and probably racked up plenty of miles doing that. How was it working? Because I know you said earlier that you had the opportunity to go to Los Angeles. You stuck around and stayed with the family. How was that working with your brother and with your father and your sister-in-law?
Well, like I said, it was the best and worst of times. You know, was a lot harder than I wanted to work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, at the age of almost 62, I'm devoting myself to the aristocratic pleasure of doing absolutely nothing. All that hard work is behind me.
Well, it's well-deserved, a well-deserved break and doing nothing, as you say. Did your father ever – I know there was a brief time where we saw him on WCW TV. They worked an angle. I think it was a Hall of Fame type of event or something with WCW and Ric Flair. And, of course, your brother were involved in that. Did was Angelo Poffo ever a part of, whether behind the scenes or any kind of on-camera role with WWF, whether it was with Vince Jr. or with Vince's father?
He worked for Vince's father, Vince McMahon Sr., in the early 1960s.
And I also, you know, we talked about the genius and you know, the Hulk Hogan match and from Saturday Night's Main Event. One of the other big memories of mine from your career was also on a Saturday Night's Main Event. It was that Battle Royal right before WrestleMania 3, and Andre the Giant headbutted you and split you open, and it was the first time I'd seen anyone bleed like that on WWF television, so to speak. How were those times wrestling guys like Andre the Giant? Were those... I would imagine being in the ring with someone of his size, just I can't imagine the magnitude of something like that, especially on national television for NBC.
Well, they needed a favor, you know. They were going to bring Andre against Hulk Hogan, and Andre had been a babyface or a good guy for all those years. So they needed to get him some vicious heat. And so they chose me, you know. And you know, everybody was real nice to me before. Then I felt like, oh, how dirty is our show?
I'm, you know what? I'm not sure. So try to keep it clean, but okay. Rob can edit it too. So
okay. I felt, you know, it's like after it was over and everybody was happy, I felt like a girl with a one-night stand. You know, the phone doesn't ring.
Sure.
You know. So anyway, they got what they wanted out of me, and, you know, it was fine.
As we kind of start winding things down, what is you know, I know you're relaxing and taking a well-deserved break. Do you have anything coming up, any projects you're working on, anything that you want to let fans know how they can reach out to you, find you on social media? Do you do any of the Facebook or Twitter or any of those kinds of things?
Well, if you go on geniuslannypoffo.com, that's geniuslannypoffo.com. Okay, that's my website.
Okay.
And I'm leaving September 17th for San Jose, California to be at an autograph signing. And then I've got several bookings, you know, coming up, and I can't remember any of them right now. Elevator's not getting to the top anymore, I'm afraid.
Well, we will send fans to your website for sure. Mr. Poffo, it has been a pleasure. I'm glad that you were able to join the 25th Hour Radio Show, and I certainly do appreciate you taking some time out of your day.
Well, I appreciate it, and I hope I wish everybody bona fortuna, the best of good fortune and good luck.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.